C1C. Number 13A.
We continue with the tone of love as principle. There we read in the text, would existence without personal friends, I guess my thought at once is touched by personal friends, and I say, oh, this has to do with principle, because principle is impersonal, doesn't know people. Principle has no people universe, therefore no personal friends. So somehow my thought is at once awakened to look out for a tone of principle. So would existence without personal friends be to you a blank? Would it? That's the question. People like people. People feel very lonely without people. And yet they like to be Christian Scientists. And if they lose friends because of Christian Science, they don't like it. They rather betray the idea in order not to lose their friend. Well, then the time will come when you will be solitary. Love comes along and says, I'm principle. I must train you into that wonderful consciousness where you see that you are only related to principle, that people don't matter. So it is love that takes us away friends when they are not necessary. Love will never take away from us something that is helpful, spiritually helpful, never. But it will always take away from us everything on which we rely if it stands in our way, spiritward, Godward, always. If we are sincere. If we are not sincere, love will not take it away. He leaves it to us. Says, all right, you go on until you find out the whole mess. Then perhaps you will come back to it. So, principle is very strict. And so we are left without sympathy, without personal sympathy. But, always when the but is coming, just halt a little bit and say, now comes the real thing. Now is the challenge, the but. But this seeming vacuum, it's a seeming vacuum, it's not the vacuum, it's only seeming, is already filled with divine love. So we see again, taking away personal friendship, personal friends, may be the very best that can happen to us. And it is for the purpose of getting nearer and nearer to God, then let those friends fall by the wayside that stand in our way, spiritward. And not lose any tears on it. Not to regret it. Let them go. Because the vacuum is already filled with divine love. There is a terrific compensation for everything love does. When this hour of development comes, you see, the hour must be right. And only when the hour is right, this will happen. It will not happen before. So when the hour is right, then the development comes. Even if you cling to a sense of personal joys, spiritual love will force you to accept what best promotes your growth. We like that sentence. I hear that sentence, the second part of that sentence, all over the place. Love will force us to accept what best promotes our growth. We like that. We like that. Don't we like that? To accept forces us to accept all what promotes our growth because we like growth. But the beginning of the sentence they never read. The prerequisites of that paragraph that they don't like. They never quote that. But we must know the prerequisite. Friends will betray and enemies will slander. We don't like it, but it happens. And it happens to everyone that wants to make progress spiritward. Everyone. Since thousands and thousands of years. Not only in the Christian religion, in every religion, not only in religion, in every science, not only in every science, in every art, in every walk of life. Whenever there is a progressive step, we will be slandered, we will be persecuted, we will be betrayed. So what? What does it matter? Because that vacuum is already filled with love. And we will get something in compensation to it which is much bigger. That we hear then especially in the 16th chapter of the textbook where Mrs. Eddy speaks about that terrific compensation where for the 7 vials full of the 7 last plagues we get the terrific compensation, love wedded to its own idea. So we should never fear the experiences we go through, but always see that behind it is love's plan that wants to give us more and more, that wants to give us more than what we are willing to accept. That's the trouble. See, the trouble is not that we get not enough from God. The trouble is that we do not want to accept what He already gives us. Because we do not want to accept what is already overflowing on us, then love has to take away that which wakes us up and makes us ready to accept it. So that will happen until the lesson is sufficient to exalt you. Again we have, it will exalt us, it promotes our growth. For man's extremity is God's opportunity. Here again we have that compensation. That all the extremities into which man is somehow cornered is all for one purpose. To see that man's extremities are God's opportunity. We begin to bend our knees. And we begin to bend our heads and be willing to obey, to accept principles command. Before that time, we like to be our own creator. We like to have things our own way. And we try to work it out our own way. So that if we are too stubborn, have a too great a personal sense about our life, about our destiny, about what should happen, about our career and everything, if we have too much a personal sense of it, we will be driven into extremities. Because then God has a chance to come in and we listen. The author has experienced the foregoing prophecy and its blessings. I guess she has. And we, in a smaller way too, we know it. We know that it is so. Thus, he teaches mortals to lay down their fleshliness and gain spirituality. This is done through self-abnegation, where we lay down our personal sense of us. Universal love is the divine way in Christian science. Now we see that now love is the way was not like the way we had at the end of the subject truth, where she showed the step-by-step way of how to affirm for ourselves, to claim for ourselves the true nature of man, the spiritual nature of man. Now it's love that is the way, and we see what she has been depicting through love as mind, love as spirit, love as law, love as soul, love as principle, is a definitely other way, a different way, the way of love, that says whatever happens in your life, never forget. It's for your good. It's for your blessing. It's for your fulfillment of your individuality and your destiny. Don't fear. Don't go back. Don't hold. Go forward. So we have epitomized this love as principle, that the loss of personal friends and joys, everything that is personal about us, forces us to win universal love. We could also have perhaps epitomized it as saying that we can prove that that man's extremities are God's opportunities. That there are no such things as man's extremities. That what looks like man's extremities are actually, factually, God's opportunities, and then we accept it. Then we say, hooray, here we go, let's have it. And we are not depressed, and are not fighting it, and are not resisting it. We read further, the sinner makes his own hell by doing evil, and the saint his own heaven by doing right. And I feel at once this is another tone. There's no more to do with that terrific compensation. Now I feel again much more at home with that law of fatherhood, which says whatever I entertain in my consciousness, that I experience. Here it is the sinner's mentality that produces and makes and creates his own hell. It is the saint's mentality that produces and makes his own heaven. Again, I have that law of cause and effect. And therefore, we can see here, she brings in really the tone of life, love as life, and shows that heaven, a state of love, is actually something that we can bring about through our mentality, through our saintlyhood. I don't like naturally that term, but I would say through our motherhood sense, we can really bring forth our own heaven. The opposite persecutions of material sense, aiding evil with evil, would deceive the very elect. And you see that apparently here she brings in a great point, that it is not so easy to go the way of love. That temptation would come in and deceive the very elect. So that Mrs. Eddy and any pioneer, spiritual pioneer, is always treading along an abyss. He has always to be very careful that he doesn't tread to the wrong side and fall down. But that actually, if we entertain the motherhood of life, which always is supporting, sustaining, maintaining, preserving, that somehow we can always walk on that narrow little way without falling down. But it needs attention, it needs to be awake to what is going on, and always reconsider what's going on within our motives, because motive determines if we have hell or heaven. So it's a constant contemplation of motives. That's the motherhood sense of life. She goes on and says, therefore, mortals must follow. The moment I have follow, I know it's the way of life. The way of life. Must follow Jesus' sayings and his demonstration which dominate the flesh. And I ask myself, what is that way to follow? What is Jesus' way that he asks us to follow? And she says, perfect and infinite mind enthroned is heaven. See, one can hardly see a connection between those two sentences. It is, mortals must follow, and then you ask yourself, well, what is that way which we have to go? We would expect now that she would tell us something about the way to follow. And then she tells us something about sitting on a throne. Perfect and infinite mind enthroned is heaven. See, at the point of love, of perfection, you take another way than in the tone of life or truth. In the tone of love, where there is nothing to be achieved, nothing to be attained, where you are always at the point of perfection, the way to follow is not the step by step, but the way to follow is to sit also on the throne of grace. To sit down with mind on the throne, say, I am a throne. My consciousness, my mentality that wants to bring forth heaven instead of hell, is that mentality which says, infinite mind is enthroned. I entertain a mind that is enthroned and therefore looks out from the throne of grace. And that's already heaven. That is not attaining heaven. That is a state of heaven. And you can see how she builds up her whole subject, how we attain true creation, the heavenly creation, how from principle onward she gave, so to say, now the practical way and say, go the way of life, go the way of truth, which is the way of Christian Science. And now she says, go the way of love. And you know what the way of love is, that you are at the end of that way and sit down on the throne and go out from mind's own perfection. The evil beliefs which originate in mortals, they are hell. So, can you see how she compares beliefs with mind? Beliefs with mind. If you have beliefs, you make your own hell. If you have mind, you have your heaven, and you establish your heaven. Man is the idea of spirit. He reflects, therefore, the beatific presence. Do you hear the tonality? Beatific, love, presence, life. The isness of perfection. Illumining the universe with light. Beautiful. Do we do that? Do we have that sense of motherhood here, where we feel, if I sit down on the throne of mind and look out from the throne of mind, the throne usually has a kingdom, has a whole universe to govern. We don't need a throne if there is no kingdom, is there? It would be not reasonable to talk about the throne if there is no realm to govern. Therefore, he shows here that motherhood of love at the point of life is a terrific fatherhood of motherhood. The fatherhood of motherhood, which says, I father the whole universe from the point of view of the throne of grace, from the point of view of perfection, and I illumine heaven and earth. I illumine the universe with light. Nobody can stop us to do that. Nobody can stop us. That consciousness of love as life, of love, of perfection giving out always perfection, giving out, projecting out. That's life. That's the fatherhood sin. But from the point of view of the throne, but from the point of view of perfection, just illumining that whole world with light. Can we see what Christian scientists would really have to do, what their job would really be in this world? Think of it, if all those Christian scientists, by the hundreds of thousands, anyway, that many were there one time, if they would be engaged instead of flower committee and parking space committee and being all that stuff, would sit down to the throne of grace, of mind, and illumine the world, the universe, with the ideas of mind. That would be our job. Mrs. Eddy expected us to do that kind of thing. And not if we have a flower for an usher. Not if we smile in the vestibule for the visitors that come in. Would be consciousness. Not quarreling about Boston, the manual, and all that silly thing. Mrs. Eddy discovered Christian Science. She didn't discover a Boston government. She discovered Christian Science and asked us to study Christian Science. And that if we have in consciousness the government of Christian Science, we really would govern the world. Illumining the universe with light. We can do that. Nobody can stop us from filling our consciousness with mind. Nobody. Tenji goes on and shows that at that point we would find man is deathless, spiritual. He is above sin and frailty, exalted. Life is always exalted. He does not cross the barrier of time, there's no death, into the vast forever of life. But he coexists with God and the universe. That would be a nice job for us, to see that man coexists with God and the universe. How silly then is all that church business? Absolutely silly. Just has no weight, has no place in the whole thing. And we have to come back to see what is really the original seed, so that there is a remnant in this universe that takes care of the idea. And that remnant is that little idea, not pretentious, not known, unknown to the world, that grows and grows and will keep the idea alive. We do not cross the barrier of time. We are in the everlasting, in the forever of life. We do coexist with the God and the universe. Every object in material thought will be destroyed. Again, you have a sense of life. But the spiritual idea, whose substance is in mind, is eternal. Here you have that seed, here you have that remnant that is eternal, cannot be touched. The offspring of God start not from matter or ephemeral dust. They are in and of spirit, divine mind, and so forever continue. Can you hear? Always she comes back to the same thing. And so forever continue. They coexist with God and the universe. They are in the vast forever of life. Can you see the isness of being? Here the motherhood of God as life shows us the isness of being, to sit down on the throne and see that there is an everlasting kingdom. God is one. The allness of deity is his oneness. All one. Generically, man is one, and specifically, man means all men. Very seldom rendering she takes in, very seldom. Meaning, really, and specifically, man is all individualities. All individualities. And so she comes back to stressing that sense of life and says, it is generally conceded that God is Father, eternal, self-created, infinite. Here you have now God as Father, life. And now she has to show the fatherhood again. If this is so, the forever father must have had children prior to Adam. He exists in the vast forever. Now she shows that man does not cross the barrier of time into the vast forever. Now she takes the other direction and says that father had children and existed before Abraham. So that the belief of a beginning is taken away, just as the belief of an end is taken away. So in that consciousness of love as life, we really see that we can fill the universe just with the fact of isness. No beginning, no end. Therefore she goes on and says, the great I Am made all that was made. The I Am, the isness of being, as all that was made. Hence, now she brings it to the point of man, hence man and the spiritual universe coexists with God. And you have again that coexistence. You will feel that the term coexistence in the whole chapter only occurs here at the point of lover's life. Because coexistence is that very point of intersection where we can see the perfection, the completion, love, as isness, coexistence, as life.